I acquired in a very short time a lot of knowledge because I was obsessed with getting information, finding the truth in things. You cannot be a great marketer without being a great copywriter first, because copywriting is basically like understanding the psychology up here. You should look what other people do, but you should not be consumed or focused too much on that. I think the beauty of life is the tragedy of life. You cannot have like only good, good, good. You also have bad, but what can you learn from the bad thing? What can you learn from the good things? There were times where I didn't know how to continue there, like mentally, and it was very tough. Was not easy at all, but it's part of life, and I'm very thankful for that.
With your businesses, do you see AI replacing staff that you've hired?
Everything starts first with research. What do they need? What do they desire? The main task of a marketer is always to create value. The greatest productivity hack for me is...
What's up, guys, and welcome back to First Things First. We have a very special guest today who doesn't actually live too far away from me. He's from Germany. Raoul Plicat, how are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Nice, man. No worries. It was interesting how we first met. We were just at somebody's birthday dinner. Mm-hmm. And we just happened to sit next to each other. I remember when I asked you what you did, you were very humble about your response. And it wasn't until like afterwards when I did a bit of research. I always do this when I have dinners with people in Dubai when I don't really know who they are. I'd like have a look at their social media and what it is that they do. And I was pretty damn impressed with what you've achieved.
Thank you.
Well, how would you introduce yourself to people who don't know who you are?
How did I introduce myself to you?
To me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just do a little bit of marketing here and there. I have a marketing business, blah, blah, blah.
And finance, I think. Payments, yeah. And that's how I would describe myself, yeah.
So you're quite humble then. You don't like to...
Well, it's just my nature, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's good, man. That's a good way to be. So you were born and bred in Germany?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
In north of Germany, near Hamburg.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Grey, rainy.
Like the UK?
Similar, yes. Like windy, very cold. Yeah. Didn't like it too much.
What did you, at school, did you perform well or you?
Absolutely not. In school, I was like, I didn't understand the purpose of school. So at that time, I didn't put much time into school. Like I did the bare minimum and that's it. Yeah. Mm.
And then did you go to university or not?
No. The last time I visited university was in 2015 for the first semester party of a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Because there were all the girls at the time. So, so yeah, at that time I finished my school. After I get my diploma, I went straight to the office and continued working. And yeah, that was it. No university for me.
Did you go straight into working for other people or did you start a business straight away?
No, when I turned 18, I started my first business.
The gym wear business?
Yes, yeah. on my 18th birthday, actually. Mm-hmm. I went to the trade register, registered my first business. And since then, I'm in business, basically. So mm-hmm. That's what I did. While the last years of school, like I just did business and... school on the side while I was sitting in school, had my laptop always open. We're like studying marketing, basically studying business, but school not so much.
When you were young, you were basically just like, I'm gonna be successful, gonna make like, money.
Kind of like, yes, at first I wanted to be a lawyer because mm-hmm. I thought like that's realistic. Entrepreneur is like not so realistic. Mm-hmm. Like become a lawyer, there you get like some nice money. And later, I was like first time in Dubai in 2016. And at that time, I had a girlfriend and her father worked here. And this is like where I got like the inspiration like for entrepreneurship. And I was like, man, that's cool. That's something I would like to do when I'm older.
Mm-hmm. And then how old were you then at the time?
16. Okay, yeah. And I was like, okay, that might be something better than a lawyer. And but first, like you have to study, you have to go like to business school, and then you become a consultant and at McKinsey or so. And then when you're 35, 40, like you have some money set aside and...
And then you can finally put that into a business.
And then you start your own business, yeah. And then like I was 16, like I didn't know much that I 2 years later will start my first business. Mm-hmm. So like the learning curve was very straightforward and very fast in these 2 years. And then like started my first business when I was 18. Yeah.
Why did you get into gym clothing?
Gym closing, because I went to the gym a lot at that time. And I actually started at the same time as Gymshark, in the same company, actually, in China.
But it's the same,
it's the same company.
Warehouse.
Yeah, like the same producer, actually.
Yeah.
And I started with it because at that time it was my passion. Gym was my passion. I read the 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and I was like, okay, how can I do something what I'm passionate about, and what do I like, basically? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, a designer might be a cool thing, because I was always creative, and I was, okay, how can I put things together? Maybe like, okay, you go to the gym, make gym clothing, and let's start it, have an e-commerce business, work 4 hours a week per day, and four hours per week, and just have a successful running business, you know? And that was the idea, and that got me started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how did it go? It's pretty difficult to launch a business just by working 4 hours a week.
Absolutely. So it wasn't 4 hours. It was like every day, because I had time. I didn't have money at that time. But I had my time, and I invested the time in setting up like online stores. At that time, like, there was no, I mean, like, there was Shopify, but it looked completely different like it's now. Like, there was no ease of use with Shopify. And so I tried different shop programs. I designed the clothing by myself. I got samples from China, and like eventually made it into production. And then I started figuring out SEO, search engine optimization, to drive traffic. Did a lot of interviews with the fitness influencers at that time. Brought them to my page. Mm-hmm. Bought a pretty successful blog with 200,000 monthly visitors, and brought them to the shop and converted them into buyers.
So what happened with that business in the end?
So it took me a long time, like, to figure this all out by myself, because I had no one. Like, there was like no coaching, nothing like to figure out things like that.
It was a different world. But
really, all what I had was like my willpower and myself. But sometimes like things took too long, or I lacked resources or knowledge, and I had to teach it myself, basically. So like I was like, for the first year, like it took me like, I mean, like I started when I was 17 with the idea. And like it took me 1.5 year like to get it really up and running. And at the same time, I became very good in conversion optimization, online shops, running Facebook ads, and so on. And then I got approached by a much older guy who had an agency, and he was like, hey, I need your knowledge. And don't you want to partner up with me? And so I was like, okay, why not? Let's figure this out. And then we partnered up, and quite fast I developed more leverage in this kind of industry. And then eventually I was like, okay, like, I have to make a decision. Like, if you can't focus on one, or if you focus on too many things, like, you don't have clear focus. So like the rabbit who goes after the two things, like, you cannot catch him. So like, I had to focus on one thing. And I said, like, okay, like, it's my passion, but I have to cut it down, because the other thing is like has way more success, and I'm young. So let's grab the opportunity. Yeah. So I closed it down with a little bit of profit and focused just fully on this part of consulting and optimizing online shops and conversion optimization. And later on, like, after that, a couple of months later, I was looking like, what is in the next big opportunity? And I figured out there was like a lot of YouTube going on. So that was the time where the first YouTube influencers were born, kind of like.
What year was this?
That was 2014. Yeah. Like end of 2013.
This was like 2 years before I uploaded my first video.
So like end of 2013, beginning of 2014. And that was the time where like the first YouTubers really blew up and started to make a business out of it. And they had at that time a lot of affiliate links. They started like to collect emails and all this kind of things, but they don't had it optimized. So like I acquired in a very short time a lot of knowledge, because I was obsessed with getting information, finding the truth in things. So and I figured out like they have like a lot of reach. They had like 500,000 Facebook fans, a million YouTube followers, and that was the time when on Facebook you posted one video and like 10 million people saw it. So you always went viral when you had like big reach. And the more reach you had, like, the bigger you grow faster. And that was an interesting time. So I was like, I approached all the YouTubers at that time, like, hey, I can optimize your business. and give me some shares in it, and I bring you revenue that was previously not there, and I take a cut on that. So that was the full focus on that. We stopped like working with hotels, with online shops. We just focus on that, and then like we produced like some pretty crazy results in the time.
It's a funny thing about creators and the people who were doing the YouTube. They usually have this really amazing skill of building an audience and a community, but they don't necessarily know how to monetize it or have the right systems in place to actually operate a profitable business.
Yeah, I mean, like, and it's...
I was one of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's the nature of things. It's one of the laws of our world that the system always optimizes into the path of least resistance. So if you're very good, like, in building an audience, this is for you, like, the path of least resistance. So it's natural that you follow that, and that if you do it really well, like, you have to focus on that also. Like, it's not easy. Like, you have your daily task, and so, like, your focus is only on this thing. On the other hand, like, to have, like, to focus on other opportunities, it takes focus away. So most, or you have to be aware about things that you don't know yet. So, and this is, like, something that you only learn, I think, over time, or some people learn it never. So, like, you have to, so it's just a nature thing that usually a system evolves, and this is basically growing an audience is a system. You repeatedly do the same things over and over again where you figured out something works. So it's like just normal that most of these people, like, they don't know how to do the other part of the business. Yeah.
You were one of the first people to get on board with the Facebook video ads.
Yeah.
Which that rolled out in 2013.
Yeah, but basically what rolled out was like the mobile platform. So before, like, Facebook ads only running on desktop, and then it came also on mobile. And yeah, that's basically when I started with Facebook ads at that time. Yeah. 2 months after it rolled out, to be exactly.
Is it still as big of a thing now compared to what it was?
I mean, like,
the Facebook effectiveness of Facebook ads.
The effectiveness, not at all, but I mean, like, it's still very effective and one of the most important acquisition channels in existence. I think, like, with paid social media ads, it depends, to be honest, like, what kind of industry you're in, but, like, generally saying, like, for all the, like, in general, I would say, like, it's still the most important channel. Yes. The effectiveness, of course, like, went down, but on the other hand, like, there's still enough opportunity. And also, I mean, like, with every kind of technology, like, the more people have access to this kind of technology, the less exponential gets the results that you get. It's great for the for the population in general, or for entrepreneurs that they have access to this kind of tool. But I mean, like, you really get big results if you're always the first one who utilizes and know how to get a leverage with technology early on.
How did you come about that? Like, because obviously nobody else was really doing it. So was it just something you thought, oh, there's an opportunity here, let's give this a try?
Well, I mean, like, I was in the space of, like, getting sales for online shops. Yeah. So, and social media was a thing. So people were on social media, and there were ads. So if you can run with paid ads, and I figure, like, a lot of things out, like, that you can do with it, I was like, yeah, this is an opportunity here. And why not, like, generate sales with money you put in? And then, and at that time, I remember the first leads I generated were like 5 to 10 cents. And that was were high quality leads at that time. They were high quality leads. And like now you can, in some industries, you can even get like for 20, 50 cents, like some leads, but they're usually mostly trash. Or in some countries you get very cheap leads, but they're trash. At that time you could get high quality leads like for 5 to 10 cents.
But now what would it cost? You talk about high quality leads and someone who's willing to spend a lot of money.
Yeah. Someone who's spending a lot of money, someone like who answers forms or like multiple questions in a form. For example, not only their first name and their email, but their first name, last name, email, phone number, like what kind of industry and what is your budget, what is your revenue target, and so on. Yes. So yeah, at that time it was different. But on the other hand, like, I mean, like, with $1,000, you could at that time get a lot of leverage. You put $1,000 in, you get like $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 out if you're like very, very successful. But on the other hand, you were not spending that much. So you were spending less. You were like maybe like $500, $300, $200 per day. Nowadays, like if you're an online shop, you're laughing about these numbers because you're spending up to 50, 100K per day and you make like 300K back, maybe 250,000, depends on your online shop. Or if you're in lead generation, like you spend like $500,000, $2 million per month make maybe 1.5, 2 million in cash back if you're good.
Yeah. So since you started doing this, how shortly after that did you found the marketing MBA?
So marketing MBA at that time, like it was a different kind of company. So that was in 2014. I renamed the company like in 2018 to marketing MBA, 2017, 2018.
And that business does what?
So marketing, my first business was basically agency business. So
you're helping creators to
launch
a product and make money.
Launch a product, take care about all the business side, or online business side, and take care about that, running that. That I built into an agency, which I sold then a couple of years later. And then my plan was afterwards, after selling it, I might go to London and live there and build like the next things there. Yeah, exactly. Not get this kind of way, but like, you know, like because also London is like in Europe, there's only London and Berlin for startups.
Yeah.
So, but Berlin is very slow and it's like very socialist. So I was like, London is a better city for me. I wanted to go to London. And before I was like, hey man, you made some money, let's go to Dubai. Like just 3 months and take a look how it is, enjoy life a little bit. Out of 3 months became now 8 years. I never went to London and built everything up afterwards.
You moved there 8 years ago?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
I thought I was early moving here. But I moved 4.5.
Yeah.
So you sold that agency. Do you mind me asking how much that you sold it at? Or was that private?
It's private, but it was quite a chunk of money.
Yeah. What made you think, right, let's get on to the next thing instead of thinking, hey, I mean, because you must have been pretty young at this point.
Yeah.
How old are you?
21.
You were 21?
Yeah, 21.
And you just sold your agency?
Yeah.
Probably for a nice amount of money.
Yeah, so like we built it up like 200-300 clients and 50 employees, around 50 employees. And the thing was, I was bored by agency. So like I had a CEO set up in place and I was like, that's not a thing that I want to do. I don't want to work with companies for like a time period of like 6 to 12 months. And they're like, and as an agency, like you can only take care about certain part of the business. You're like part of the wheel. You're one part. And you can make an amazing job as an agency. But when your client has like so many broken parts, you can deliver the best job performance that you can do and they will still blame you.
And yeah, like if they were putting out suboptimal content or it was not going out as frequent.
Like the wheel is large and like depending on what kind of industry you are in, like there are so many things that can break. And I was like, this is not what I want to do. And on the other hand, like what I did previously with the first YouTubers was like, I took care about all the business side. So I said like, you do what you're doing best, you do your content and I take care about the rest. And that was the thing that made it work actually, because I was in control about every single thing there. And
you're guiding them on the type of content to make, or you just letting them do that?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no, like dependent. But I mean, like the content creators I worked with, they were good in their respective field and they knew already what kind of content their audience wanted. So the only thing usually I influenced was either like when it came like to video sales letters or webinars or stuff like that. This kind of content, like launch videos, pre-launch videos, stuff like that, how to generate hype, all this kind of stuff. This, like, I developed. But all the rest, they usually did. But I figured out, like, when I have more control, like, the results are better because I care. And then I was like, okay, like, there are, like, two things that I want to do in my life. This is software, technology. And on the other hand, like, produce things that I think are meaningful, worthwhile, and are fun for me. And then that was a part where I basically focused fully on Build Marketing MBA, which is kind of like, I don't call it an agency because it's more a production house. So same, like there are car companies and they have like companies that deliver to them just one part of the car, like for the doorknob or like some part of wheels. I was like this kind of company.
That's what an agency would be.
No. Like an agency works always on multiple clients.
Yeah.
So what I would do is I would produce like just a handful of clients and just focus on them and like work long term and take control about everything of the marketing side. So like I didn't want to take on new clients. I didn't want to like to focus on client generation. I didn't want to focus on like working short term with people. I wanted like, okay, you have a great product, you have a great brand, and I want to work long term with you for the next years or forever. Mm-hmm. So, and this is the approach.
So I clearly wasn't doing well enough if you didn't approach me. I could have done with someone like you 5-6 years ago.
Maybe,
for sure.
Yeah.
Who's been like one of your biggest client success stories?
I think one of my biggest client success stories, I mean, like every client has success stories. Depends.
Failure
is not an option. No, there is no failure like this. Like you figure things out and you move forward.
Yeah.
It depends on what kind of industry. Like when it comes to event ticket sales, there was like a sales guy in Germany, like where I sold up to 40,000 tickets per year. When we launched a period, like we had like a launch period for the next year record, I think I sold like 12,000 in like 48 hours. When it comes like to consulting business, with my business partners, we built one of the largest consulting companies in Germany, like now with 40 million annual revenue. So there are like a lot of success stories. So like when it comes to book launch, in 69 hours, I sold 25,000 books. For Philipp Plein, in 2018, together with Emra, we did like at that time, like the most seen fashion show for him. So like there are like different kind of success stories. Yeah. Mm.
So if somebody has a product or a service they want to launch, I know this can get quite complex and deep, but what are the very basic essential sort of steps you need to follow if you want to generate as many sales as possible?
So the first thing is that no idea works twice. So a lot of people see someone launching a product and then they're like, okay, like I will do the exact same thing and it will not work. So one thing of a successful product launch is it has to be original. It has to be new. So you can look at other launches and look what went well there, but you shouldn't copy like the exact same things. You shouldn't copy the exact same steps. You shouldn't just copy paste it, mm-hmm. or like just copy paste emails and so on, like, or copy the idea even. Like instead, like you should figure out like what is your market and what are the people, what do your target group, what do they need? Mm-hmm. What do they desire? So everything starts first with research. Figuring out what they want. And
one way to do that is to give your audience a questionnaire or polls to get an idea of what it is that they want.
Yeah, exactly. You want to, for example, you want to run a poll for your customers and your leads. Mm-hmm. So like there are certain kinds of questions that you want to ask them. And one of the questions should be like, what annoys you at your current situation? Why you ask this kind of question? Because you ask for a feeling. Mm-hmm. What annoys us? So when we have when we think about something that annoys us, usually we as people, most of the time, we don't know what we actually want or need, but we know what disturbs us, what annoys us. Mm-hmm. And when we think about that, you get an emotion. And this emotion gets translated basically into words. So you get the words and you collect the data. And then you look at it and you get like out of like 500, 1,000 answers, you get a pretty clear picture of what disturbs them. And then you think like an engineer, you reverse engineer, like you figure out, okay, what do I need to bring them so they don't have this feeling anymore? Mm-hmm. And this is one big part of your launch, of your campaign, basically. And every campaign surrounds itself around what I call the big idea. So it's, and first of all, it has to be original. You look at other things. You look in other industries, not your own, because a big idea is something, it has to be something, if you want to have a successful launch, you have to launch something that breaks the current order of magnitude, because you want to break out of your circle. Ideally, if you launch something, you want to generate hype, you want to bring new people, and you want to have people talking about it. So it has to be original, but it also has to break your current order of magnitude. Our world is consisting out of concepts. Mm-hmm. Billions, trillions of concepts. And your success on social media is concept, basically. And in order to grow bigger, you have to break out. You have to create a new order of magnitude that new people get attention, that current people that know you start thinking about you again, that they start talking about you again. Mm-hmm. So you have to generate an original big idea. In order to do that, you look like in other industry. For example, what does Ariana Grande do? How did she launch a product? You look at Tesla, for example. How did Elon Musk launch a product? And you collect all the data. And this is also how you get creative, basically. You consume content, videos. On the other hand, if you want to create a great campaign, you always have to put something in from your own soul, something that moves you, some story you have to tell, something that is important for you, some values, some stories, something where you, something, some, like, some story that you have written by yourself in your own life, something that was maybe painful for you. Because without this, no campaign has ever a soul. And a really good campaign always has soul. Like, it's something from the individual who is launching the campaign or is behind launching the campaign. Every great campaign has something that gives goosebumps or emotions or happiness. So this is something that you want to put in there as well. How can I tell my story in a unique way? You get inspired from other industries and you put all these things together. And on the other hand, you also know what your target group, what annoys them, what they want. And you put all this together and you have born a big idea.
Okay. So is this something, would you come up with the idea yourself or your team? Or is it something where you kind of all sit down together with the client and then you come up with something?
Well, it depends. Most of the time, I would say it was me, but not always. Of course, you have certain people you sit around with, and ideally you want to have a great team who also contribute to this part. And they, nothing great is ever built alone, I would say. You always need a collective of people. If you want to do really great and good things in life, you have to be a collective of people. Otherwise, it's also boring life. Mm. You want to do everything by yourself.
Is there a particular brand or individual who you think they just consistently nail it every time they do a campaign?
I would say, for example, Kylie Jenner does a very good job with her cosmetic line.
What does she do?
The way how she launches product, how she builds the hype. Mm-hmm. Kanye West, is another example. A few weeks ago at the Super Bowl, he did
I think I heard about this.
He recorded the ad basically with his phone. Yeah. And it's basically a form of counter signaling, because everyone at Super Bowl tries to make the best ad, the most perfect looking ad. And he breaks his pattern by just fuck it. Mm-hmm. I record it with my phone. So immediately the counter signaling is basically you showcase you're doing the opposite as everyone else in one industry, in one target group, in one concept, and you break the pattern. Mm-hmm. And you get immediately all kind of attention because it's so unusual. You have to be bold with it. Same like Elon Musk did with when he launches the Cybertruck. What did he do? He threw a ball of it and mm-hmm. broke, basically. And he said it shouldn't happen. But actually this was funny and he manages very well. Got him so much attention. I think one of the...
Do you think he planned for that to happen?
Hard to say. Might be... I don't think... When I look at his reaction, it looks sincere. So I don't think that shouldn't... or that it should happen. Mm-hmm. From what I heard is that basically they said to him, it should not break. but please don't throw something at it. And he throws something at it. So, but yeah, and I think like Elon Musk is one of the greatest marketers of mm-hmm. our planet right now. Like he, like, and this is the other thing with marketing, why I love marketing so much, because marketing is just a man-made label. Basically, for me, it's like finding the truth in things. Like, I'm always interested in the truth, and in order like to understand the world, you need to understand concepts, because you're limited by your understanding of the concepts you have of this world. Mm-hmm. So if you want to evolve, you have to understand concepts that are holding you back, or concepts that you can use in order to move forward in life. And Elon Musk is, I think, rarely labeled as a marketer. There are some people who label him as a marketer, but he's a really great marketer.
He always manages to have people talking about him.
Exactly.
Never at one point is he irrelevant.
Exactly.
He's always doing something or saying something to be in the news.
And he built his X Twitter following to 150, 160 million. So, I think he's one of the greatest marketers on this planet, actually.
Yeah.
And this requires like a deep understanding of truths and concepts to understand how does the world work. And as a marketer, what I like also, like, you have to be open-minded, because if you're not open-minded, you cannot see different perspectives. You need to be open, like, to see different perspectives in order, like, to evolve. And you have to spend time also with things that you might not like to understand the perspective. And that makes you, I think, very good in life, actually, like, to see different sides always. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, like, for me, like, marketing is way more than just putting a campaign. Like, it's exploring and understanding concepts of how our world is written and made. And there's so much to discover. It's like our life is one big adventure. And I think this is how we should approach life, because we don't know when it's over, when it ends. Could be end tomorrow.
Yeah.
So what, like, spend it wisely.
So I feel like this kind of thing is, it comes natural to you. I mean, of course, you're doing your research and you're learning, but I feel like your brain is just like wired differently. Do you think that? Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, I know my brain is kind of wired differently, a little bit. But on the other hand, like, I'm always curious about life. Mm-hmm. And I'm bored very fast. So I think, like, yeah, I mean, like, but on the other hand, like we have to find meaning in life for some things that excites us. And there's so much to discover in life. And if you can figure out things and make a business out of it, it's just, everything is in front of us. We have technology, like, we have access, instant access mm-hmm. to technology and, like, to knowledge, and we can explore so many things and use it.
So you're not bored of marketing MBA yet?
No. I mean, like, the MBA means money in the bank account, because I think, like, it was kind of like a joke, but on the other hand, I was like, there's, like, also truth in it. There's, like, a principle, because I think, like, money is, or the result of any marketing campaign is ultimately not the impressions you get. Like, you can get millions of impressions, mm-hmm. but if you don't convert this into buyers, there's, like, no effect. So, like, it's the benchmark. Money in the bank account is a benchmark, and every great marketing campaign should be measured by the amount of revenue it generates, or the amount of profit you yield with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your thoughts currently on the creator economy and what direction it's going in? Do you think it's going to get even bigger and bigger, or do you think at one point it's going to plateau? Because, I mean, everybody now wants to be a creator, influencer.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, like, the more people have access to technology with the... everything started with the iPhone, basically. The iPhone made it possible that creators can exist. And on the other hand, we get trained by technology and we get better with the technology. It moves hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So, like, yes, like, there will be more creators. But on the other hand, it will be also more difficult, because the more people have access to technology, to the same technology, to the same skills, the harder it will get for the general population to succeed as a creator. So what do you need to do? You have to think creatively. Mm-hmm. You have to... again, like, you have to be very creative to stand out. You have to create original things, things that were not there. On the one hand, like, you should look what other people do, but you should not be consumed or focused too much on that, like, how other people do their thing. You should need, or you have to find your own way, your own way of doing things. And this is a learning process, because you have to learn to trust yourself and that your ideas are worth watching. So you have to figure out, how can I communicate my ideas of how I see the world? How can I tell my story to the world in a way that is not told yet, in a way that is not seen yet? So it generates attention. Because on the other hand, technology also trains us to have shorter and shorter attention spans. We don't, I mean, like, TikTok is the best example. You have like 1.5 seconds to generate attention. You have to learn the craft, the master of how to create a hook to get the attention of people. And this is like a skill set. This is like a skill set. You have to consume a lot of content and you have to basically do the basics.
Yeah.
What a lot of people don't do. They're asking, what is the secret to break through on social media? What is the one secret? There is no secret. The only thing is, you take a pen of, or like a piece of paper and a pen, and you consume a lot of content. And you ask your, and the content you stick with, you ask yourself why it stick with you. And you start to write it down. You have to analyze it like a data machine, which you are. We are data machines. So but you have to have the ability of reflection. You have to reflect yourself. You have to ask questions to yourself. Why did I spend my attention on this? And then you come up with, maybe the first frame was like this. Maybe there was a word written like that. Maybe there was a soundtrack that was resonating with me very well. What kind of soundtrack? Mm-hmm. And you make this with 100, 150, 200 videos. Nobody does it. Like 0.0001%, I can say, of people do that who want to be really serious creators. The ones they do, they have an advantage, because they have now 200 videos of data and they know why they went viral. And now they can start to try it by themselves. Reverse engineering, figuring out. And then, like, first, like, you copy, paste something, and you try. And you get feedback. And you either get negative feedback or positive feedback. And then you have to try, be persistent. And out of a sudden, you find a working model. And now you bring in your own story. Like, your own, like, the way how you see the world, the things you believe in, what is important for you. And now you know how to get attention, and you tell your own story, and out of a sudden you're unique, you're original, and you figured out the craft of getting attention.
That's good shit. Yeah, I usually find that the people who have figured out a way to grow quite rapidly, it's not that they're doing anything particularly different that's not been done before, not been said before. It's just they've just tweaked the way it's presented, and they've added a little bit of their personality, or just presented it in a slightly different way, but it's their way and it's unique to them.
Yeah, it's
and
very,
that is what's making people like, oh, this person is standing out more than everybody else.
Exactly. It's very nuanced, actually, in our world. And the winners and losers usually do the same thing, but there's like sometimes like a very small difference, and you can often only see it in the data. So for example, with running Facebook ads, to give you another example, like every day, like, there are millions of people who run Facebook ads, probably. And every day, like, most of them, like, do the same things. And there are only a few people who really succeed with it, like, who really scale up. And, like, sometimes it's little things. So, like, for example, to excluding an age group. For example, I remember like focusing, for example, only on males, 25 to 34, only display ads on Wi-Fi. Cut out, I call it, call the process, cut out the fat. So cut out everything that doesn't yield results. So it's not a lot of work. It's like 2 minutes of work. It's not much. Everyone could do it. Everyone who is in the same industry or in the same field, who is a competitor could do it. He had same access to the same technology. But people don't spend the time on the little things. And the little things are as much as important as the big things. Because only by optimizing the little things step by step by step, you get exponential results. Because it, when you do one thing and you optimize it, you do the next thing and you get leverage.
What advice would you give to someone who's looking to find somebody to run ads for their business or company? Because I know there's a lot of self-proclaimed ad experts.
Yeah.
But even from my experience, a lot of them are pretty trash and I can do a better job.
Yeah, but because first of all, you, it sounds so general, but you have to think like an athlete. Like you have to, if you want to become really good in ads, like it's same like everything else in life. You have to commit yourself. You have to be dedicated, disciplined. And you have to be willing to ask you this uncomfortable questions also. I think this is like the general thing. And there are a lot, like a lot of advertisers who want to live on Bali, the easy life in shorts, working on the beach or in like some cafe and make their 10, 15K per month. And you can do this perfectly fine. If this is what you want, like do it, but you will be trash, like what you just said. Yeah. If you want to be really great at what you do, like you have to understand that top performance plays by different rules. So it doesn't feel great. It's harsh. It's brutal. And you need to ask yourself the right questions. And this means like, where can I find growth? And you have to be really disciplined and dedicated. And you have to be willing also not to give up. And you have to understand one principle, which is the principle of delayed attribution. Our whole world doesn't happen at the same time. Everywhere is a time delay. And in everything, when I talk to you, my words reach you in delayed time. It's not instant present. But for example, especially like for lead generation or Facebook, let's stay at lead generation at Facebook ads or YouTube ads generally. In lead generation, it's delayed attribution. So if someone sees an ad of you today, in general, from our data, from the data that we have, they convert to a lead like 60 or to a client in 60 or 90 days later. So like you have a time delay. Every dollar that you spend today in average will, or at least 50% you make back within 30 days. The rest is up to 3 months. So this about this, you should be aware. And what most advertisers do, they simply kill the ads too early. So they generate, most of them, like they don't look like over a longer time period. They don't do the correct attribution and look at it. Where did this lead come from initially? From which campaign? And they kill the ads too early. They see just like they look over a time frame of 7 or 14 days and they'll see like, okay, there's no performance, kill it. But in reality, like if you would look like 3 months later, there's a lot of performance there. You just killed it too early. And or like even like sometimes 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, you just killed it too early. They don't do the right attribution. They're like not willing like to look at the data. They're not willing to cut the fat. They're not willing like to figure out which target groups perform better than others and set up. And I mean, like a few years ago, it was easier before a lot of law and bureaucracy came in and restricted Facebook ad tracking, where you could see like Facebook giving you sufficient amount of data back where you could make the right decisions. Now you need like additional tracking tools in order like to understand how is the performance working on Facebook, because Facebook simply can't give you the right data anymore. But I mean, like this is all like principles that you have to understand as an advertiser on Facebook, Meta ads, Google ads, LinkedIn, TikTok, wherever.
Apart from running the campaigns and helping the creators to monetize, were you also responsible for helping to build and grow their personal brand?
Yeah, I mean, like this is part of the process. Yeah. I mean, like branding,
is it different from is personal branding different from marketing?
No, not really. Not really. I mean, like there's like. Not really, because you do branding. At this, branding is basically like the concept of creating mental availability. So you see a brand, this one, mm-hmm. and the more often you see it, the higher is the mental availability. I say toothpaste. What are you thinking about?
Colgate.
Why you think about Colgate? Because it has the highest mental availability. There are 50,000 more toothpaste right now in this world. Why you think about Colgate? Because they did the best job of retaining the highest mental availability, which they rented in your head. Mm-hmm. So the concept of branding is basically just creating a category and owning this category by creating the highest mental availability. If I say fast food, which brand are you thinking?
McDonald's.
So some people say Burger King. So in this case, Burger King did a better job of retaining the mental availability. Mm-hmm. But most people would say McDonald's, exactly, for the same thing, for the same reason.
So it's almost like you want to get yourself out there,
yeah, like,
as much as possible, in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you cannot not brand yourself. You always brand yourself with everything you put out there.
Every single piece of content.
Every single piece of content is part of, is branding, basically. Mm-hmm. But as a great marketer, you want to understand what does the audience need, what they want to see, in order for them to become clients. And then you engineer the right content in the right order and distribute it with the help of paid ads. But you can also distribute it in like multi-dimensional levels, which is outside marketing, out-of-home marketing, billboards, influencer marketing. So like you could do, or you should do this also. Like it's part of brand involvement. Like the larger you grow as a brand, the more you need to go outside of your space where you originated.
Yeah, it was like me when I was just stuck within fitness.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to branch away from this. Exactly. There'll always be some element of fitness to the content I make, but...
Exactly.
It's like the travel, the lifestyle.
Yeah, so and exactly. You venture into other categories. You talk with other people outside of the fitness industry. It's also branding. Mm-hmm. So it's also, in the end, like people get the picture, like you paint a mental picture of...
That's why so many people want to get pictures with celebrities or someone who has more followers or higher status than them, because that can help their own brand image being associated with somebody who's
higher. Exactly. Yeah. Like, and this is also a very good concept, like to create good marketing campaigns, because you want to create content basically, or if you want to create a campaign for your target audience, you want to bring an aspect inside that makes them looking good in front of others when they share your piece of content. Mm-hmm. This is a very little thing. It's just one sentence that I just said. But it gives you, like, if you think about it, it opens up a whole new world. Maybe you had a good idea, but you didn't have this single aspect inside of it. Mm-hmm. Now you bring this little aspect inside of it. And out of a sudden, like, thousands of people start sharing your ad because you thought about that, how to make them look better in front of your, in front of their friends on social media. Mm-hmm. It's a massive thing. Like last year, like we did a Facebook ad that went viral because of that. Like I think it was like 10,000 people that shared the ad, like an ad, actual ad, and that drove.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and that's we had like 43,000 likes in just like the first 2-3 weeks. Just in 2-3 weeks, mm-hmm. organically, like an ad that we paid money to Facebook, and people who saw it liked it so much that so many people shared it. We got so many exposure, so much reach out of that.
And so it's almost like you'd want to treat an ad like an organic piece of content, which ultimately should bring some sort of value or bring out some emotion in the viewer.
Exactly. You are like the main task of a marketer is always to create value, and you have to think about the benefits. Like that's why I say like you cannot be a great marketer without being a great copywriter first, because copywriting is basically like understanding the psychology up here and bringing it down to words, which enables your target group like to see a new perspective, to come up with new thoughts. And you need to have new thoughts in order to what? To change your behavior. Without new thoughts, no individual on this planet can ever change their behavior. Mm-hmm. So this is something that you need to understand. And the difference between good copywriting and great copywriting is basically a good copywriter, if you see an ad of a good copywriter, you understand, you know the product, you know the price, you know what you get. But a great copywriter makes you feel understood and you understand, oh, wow. This is about me, this brand, this product, this guy. He understands what I need. This is great copywriting. Mm. So great copywriting is when the prospect understands this is about me. This, he understands me. This is great copywriting. Whereas good copywriting is just, okay, I know the price, I know the product. Okay, great.
It's pretty interesting. You, with everything that you know and what you've achieved, you've done this all without really needing to take advantage of branding yourself a huge amount. It's not like you've, you know, put a lot of your time and effort into growing on social media. You've kind of done all of this almost like behind the scenes in a way. Like, yeah. Do you have any aspirations of really scaling your personal brand?
So the thing is like I was visible and that is the thing. Like, I was visible for the people who I wanted to work with.
Yeah.
Because based on the results, I created value. This is the main thing in life. We always should, everyone should create value with the things that they do. So like, you don't need like a large presence on social media to do what I did. It was not needed for me.
But just having this conversation, I feel like if you really wanted to go for it, you would literally just blow up.
Maybe I could. I don't know.
But would you want that?
That's the other question. Long time I didn't. I was actually like very like, I'm not sure if I want this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this was like my path of least resistance was like basically do what I do, create value there, and like not to blow up. Stay hidden was my path of least resistance.
The content creation side of things and being a social figure and getting the fame can be a huge distraction.
It can be.
Imagine how many messages you get, invites you get, even like women as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good thing, but it's also, you don't necessarily always want that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's part of the process. And this is, like, again, like a principle of life. Like, there will be distractions everywhere.
Mm.
But it's normal, and you have to deal with it. Like, it's normal. Like, no one of us is perfect. No one has figured out life, like, to a certain degree, like, where we say, like, oh, this is, like, perfect straight away. Yeah, love. Go for it. No. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. Life is life where we are all flawed in our human nature. We are, no one of us is perfect. I'm far from being perfect at all. But on the other hand, like, there are things also like where you have like talent, where you see the good things in life and where you can provide value to other people. And I think this is what you should focus on. And from the rest, you learn.
Mm.
And there will be distractions, of course. But if you want to really do something great in life, you have to, on the one hand, to know that there are distractions, you have to discover distractions. You have to, that's why I say you have to always be like a reflective person about yourself.
You seem very self-aware.
Yeah. I think like this is like the thing that I put most value about around it. Because if I, life has so much to teach us. And if I'm not self-reflective, I make so many experiences, but where's the lesson out of it?
Yeah.
And I cannot improve myself. And life, like we have this short life. We don't know when it ends. We don't know when, how. So let's see it as an adventure and figuring out like, okay, when there's things, tough times, good times, what can I learn from this? And how can I become a better person? And sometimes, yeah, I will fail. It's unfortunately, this is the process of life. But let's move on and figuring out and become a better person in the end.
Do you have any bad habits at the moment that you're trying to correct? Anything about yourself that you're trying to change?
Too many, which of them?
How do you stay productive? I mean, you've got the company now, which you are, what's your position? I mean, you're the CEO.
I mean, like I have a group of company in the total. I'm CEO. There are different companies. Like for example, for Copecard, we have a great team, and this is like a great collective. I have to mention this here because it's not me alone. There are, I think, now around 150 people in Copecard. We have an office in companies in US where there's a great CEO. We have a company in Germany where it's a great CEO. We have a company here in UAE where it's a great CEO. And all over all of this is another global CEO, Michael, my business partner also. And yeah, so like the biggest productivity for me is like my people. I think I'm very lucky. And also give myself some credit for that, like to choose the right people around me. was not always like that. Yeah, like I said, it's like part of finding out, like you have to make certain experiences to figure out like what kind of people you want in your life and what kind of people you better not have in your life. So the greatest productivity hack for me is having great people around me and incentivize them greatly and make sure they profit from the opportunity that you create as a collective as much as you do.
So there's always financial incentives for those people that you hire to get them to work.
Well, sometimes it's financial, but it doesn't have to be always financial. I mean, like, it depends on the person, how the person is driven. This is something like you have to figure out. You have to talk with people about clear expectations. What are your expectations like to in order like to succeed here in this company, in order like what you would like to see from me? What is important for you? This is one of the questions I ask basically everyone. What is important for you? Like, just have like an honest talk. Like, if you have like the same in a relationship with a partner, you ask them if you want to have a good relationship. You ask them, what do you want from me? What do you expect from me? And then like you decide. Ideally, you have this kind of questions before you date a person long term or marry it. Like, to figure out like, can you grow together or not? And this is the same thing like with people. And like to figure out what they want. And some people, yes, some people want money, and that's perfectly fine. Some people want stability. Some people want other incentives, or like other way, or they want to, maybe it's not money right now, but maybe they want to have to be part of the company. Yeah,
like some freedom or responsibility.
Freedom, responsibility, stock options, stuff like that. But I mean, like in the end, like for me, like life is one big, great adventure. And I'm not Alexander the Great, who is like conquering empires on a horse. I want to do it with companies and create more value for the world and take the right people with me on board and make them make sure they also profit from that.
So how would, if you wanted to hire somebody?
Yeah.
Is there a particular platform you would use?
Yeah. Like there's a Recruity that we're using. We are using Recruity and currently I think Bamboo HR. These are like the
Bumble
two.
HR.
No, Bumble. Not Bumble. Bumble is something else, my friend. Bumble is something else.
I'll start using that to hire people.
And also our hiring platform is not Raya. So
yeah.
No, it's good. Recruity is just for recruiting. It's, I think, like no affiliation with them. It's a cool tool, and same with Bamboo HR. This is what we currently use. But
then you personally interview them?
No, not at all anymore. No.
So you're putting faith in your staff to hire the right people.
We have like six people. In all companies, like we have different HR teams. Usually, like in total, we have 350 people, and. For example, with Marketing MBA, we have six people currently in HR. With Copecard, I think we have three or two. In the others, we have like one or two people who take care of HR. But we have principles outlined of what kind of people we have. And the other thing, like you, even with the best process, with the best principles, you never score 100% with the people. Yeah. It's also part of life, part of that. But you can increase your chance. And this is one thing what you also want to do in life, is to increase your probability of success, what most people forget. Like if you optimize the ad, like you cut out things that don't work, you increase your probability of success within the certain categories that work. Same with any marketing campaign. You always want to figure out how can you increase your probability about success. This is how professionals think. Amateurs think there's luck. Professionals think there is actually, what is the actual probability of success and how can I increase it? What are the steps? What are the milestones? What are the concepts, basically, that increase the probability of success?
A question I get asked a lot is from like a lot of creators who speak multiple languages. So they'll speak English, but they may also speak German, or they might speak Spanish, whatever it might be. What advice would you give to them when it comes to creating content? Is it worth them just focusing on speaking English because you can reach the biggest audience? Or is it worth trying to maybe speak your native language because it's going to come across as being more natural? Like, what approach would you follow?
Well, I have seen, to be honest, very few examples where it, like, really help like to speak multiple languages. Like either like you blow up in your own country or like you blow up in English, but like mastering both at the same time and get significant more success is something where I'm not sure that I have seen it on more than one or two people at all.
Mm.
And but times are changing right now with AI. Like
somebody's done, they've AI'd my voice and got me speaking German.
Really?
And it is freakishly good.
Yeah, like same thing with me. Like this guy over there, he made my voice in Arabic, which was kind of funny. I sent to my local friends here and there. I was like, yeah, it's not bad for Egypt. So like something, Egypt Arabic, some things are weird, but generally it's good. Mm. One didn't understand at all that it was not AI. So he was like, since when, like, how did you speak Arabic?
But that's, I mean, this is just like the early stages.
Yeah, exactly. And the rate of progress is exponential.
Mm-hmm.
So like it's a train that doesn't stop now. So I think like now we're in a very interesting turning point in the world, because now like the accessibility in different languages will be there and will be kind of new normal,
mm-hmm.
and it will be automated. So, and this is like then a new acquisition channel. So instead of like, okay, there's like maybe English as a main language and German as a second language or French or Italian, where you focus on, you just translate your videos and, it will be not as successful maybe as your main language,
mm-hmm.
but it gives you like an additional acquisition channel, a new kind of business that you can run and which generates like a portion, maybe 10-20%. But you roll it out like now in like 5, 15, 20, 30 different languages. And all of a sudden, like you have significant more success with all these languages combined than in your main language. I think this is going to be happen.
Well, I think Mr. Beast has done it very well with his, he's got multiple channels in different languages. And I mean, I don't know how well any products he sells through those videos will do, but just the ad revenue alone, from getting millions, tens of millions of views in on your Spanish speaking channel, makes it kind of worthwhile.
For I mean, like for sure, if the effort is lower than the end result, then for sure it makes sense. Yeah.
Mm.
Or if you have like longer target game, like brand exposure, like yeah, it always depends on the time frame that you look at it. Maybe short term, it's like not very profitable, but if like the new generation, it's kind of like your happy meal, like, and they become customers or consume your content more like in the main language in 3 or 4 years, then why not? Yeah.
With your businesses, do you see AI making things more productive and streamlined, or do you see it actually replacing staff that you've hired?
It depends. Like, for example, for support, things like that, yes, you can make things more effective, way smoother. For fraud detection, yes, you can use AI. For other things, I mean, like, for marketing-wise, like, it's still too stupid.
Yeah.
It's way too stupid.
Well, I say, if you were to say to AI, come up with a marketing campaign for a launch of this new product,
yeah,
which I want to release, it will be useless at that.
It's the biggest crap ever. Yeah. It's like biggest crap ever. There's like so many things that are not treated with respect that makes a campaign great.
Mm.
It's just like an outline that you can find in any like business book or what you learn in university. Like the little things that make the difference, no chance at all.
Yeah, I tried it with AI with like fitness programming. Like I wonder whether an AI bot could replace an online coach.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask it a question. Of course, you have to be quite specific with and appropriate with the questions that you're asking.
Mm.
And it can give you a training program or some like guidelines to follow, but it doesn't fully understand the client or the individual that it's supplying the program for.
Yeah.
Like I could look at it and be like, well, yeah, it's a solid program, but this program is not suitable for this individual.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, we should not make the mistake and say, like, okay, AI will never reach it. It's just, like, right now, the biggest product, the most accessible product for everyone is general language models, and they're general for a reason. So, like, if you train an AI on specific things, it depends on the data, what you put in, and how the training data is. If your training data is very specific and you put... because all of our knowledge that we retrain as people in our hands about a certain topic works always in respect in relation to other topics, subtopics inside the bigger topics. So like if you train an AI on this data and you put in the hours and you have the right engineers to do that and you're an expert in your field and you commit yourself to this certain topic, you can replace yourself 10 times fold for sure.
Mm.
But you need to have the resources. You have to understand how it's being done. And you have to invest the time. And it's a lot of time and it's a new topic and you have to understand it. And like I said, like it's the same thing right now with like Facebook ads 10 years ago. Like a lot of people have access to the technology, not everyone. We are very early. But the people who utilize it now as the early stage, they get now the head start in 2, 3, 4 years. Massively.
Yeah. So you're actively trying to get involved as soon as possible.
Yeah, we are launching right now like the PR infrastructure with the help of AI. Like for the last 13 months, like we developed like a new company of mine with a business partner of mine as well inside of the PR space. So we are building basically the PR infrastructure for the new world with the help of AI. So basically, imagine like you want some PR articles, like AI writes it. I mean, like ChatGPT can do it, but it's shit and it gets detected and stuff like that. But not only like that, like you get listed, you get access to journalists and just inside one platform. Or if you're a PR agency, basically, like you can manage or bring down the time to article from an average 15 days to like 90 minutes at 75% less costs. So you can produce way more articles for way more clients with AI and the right infrastructure. It's basically like, think about that. If you want to grow the GDP of a country, the country needs streets, it needs a harbor, it needs a port in order to increase the transaction speed with other countries. So like you can import, export goods.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same thing like for our world. Like you need the right infrastructure in your business. And if you're a PR agency, you want to have the right infrastructure inside of your business that enables you to produce articles faster, to serve more clients better, and to bring them more results with PR. And this is like what we are focusing right now. Like last week, we got the editor-in-chief of the largest newspaper in Germany as an advisor on the board and shareholder of Germany's most influential and important newspaper. And we're making big steps there. And this will be like my new adventure for the next few years, I think.
So if I came to you and I'd be like, right, I need some help with some PR stuff.
Yeah.
I want to get my name out there more.
Yeah.
You would get AI to write an article about me, about my achievements, what I've done, make me sound good.
And exactly. You can basically sign up and by yourself. And write articles about yourself with the help of AI. Yeah, and distribute it, like you select like which kind of magazines you want, what kind of journalists, and bam, out there. Very easy and accessible.
So then like, let's say, for example, GQ.
Yeah.
They would get it, and then they decide, do we want to put this article in or not?
Yeah.
And then would they have editors tweaking the text?
Yes. This on the one hand, or for example, if they're like, for example, paid articles, or this is for press releases. If you want to have like placements, for example, where you're like, okay, like I just wanted to have in this news magazine the placement, and it costs us $500. You select it, and it gets sent automatically. Your credit card gets billed. Halas, done.
How did you come up with that idea?
The initial idea, to be honest, wasn't mine. Like my business partner approached me and was like, "Hey, can we build like this idea with a writer?" And I mean, like I have a lot of PR experience with my other companies, and because we always bootstrapped everything and had no outside money, and worked also a lot of times with PR, like to generate news. But I know how time consuming and annoying this is. Basically, you pick up your phone, okay? You pick up your phone, and somebody is like, if you have a PR agency, they ask you basically like, this is the trend right now. Okay, can you please tell us more about your trend because you're an expert about this topic? So you record like 5 to 7 minute voice message, you send it to them, they put it then into a Google Docs, they write it down, make mistakes, send you over to you, you give feedback in Google Docs 2, 3 times, 2 weeks passed, then the article gets sent out. This is how it works. Right now, what you do is like you open the software as a PR agency, you put in your questions, send them to the client answers via voice message inside the form. AI cuts out all the mistakes already. So like you can, same like ChatGPT, you can dictate, you get this form back, article gets written, client can give it within like 2 minutes, 2, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever time you put in, can give feedback, and you have a ready article. You can make corrections and so on. And I think this will be also like a new money making opportunity for people, because like we make it so easily, like if people want to make money now online, what they need to do is like they can sign up with this tool, or what they need to understand the basics of PR, which you can learn basically, I think, in 2 weeks to 1 month. If you're like very dedicated, maybe 2-3 months, you can find all the information about how to write great articles, how PR works. There are so many books out there. And the second thing is what you need to do is like you need to know how to sell article, or like how to sell to people. You need the craft of selling, which is like one of the most important topics. Then you sign up and as an agency model, and you resell newsrooms, I don't know, like for $2,000. You create them in 5 minutes for other people. It's fully white labeled. You write articles, get a retainer, done.
Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, the more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bioniq. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. And once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bioniq Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more or give them a try, head over to bioniq.com, and you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode. I feel like you're the type of person that just has all these ideas. Like you're just a natural problem solver.
I mean, like, yes, like, I mean, like, this is, I think, also part of how I grew up, is like about solving problems and yeah, but I think anyone can train themselves on being problem solver, just like in some categories you're better and some you're worse.
How did CopeCut come about?
CopeCut was born out of my own frustration. So we used a different payment provider at the time, and in the last quarter of 2016, like I had a couple of product launches. So events was one of them, book launch, different kind of product launches. And always I crashed it. So like in the peak, I think like we lost 150 to 200,000 euro in 2 hours because...
Couldn't handle the traffic.
And on the other hand, like I always wanted to know the customer lifetime value.
Like, yeah.
One of the most important KPIs, basically, how much does one customer spends over his lifetime, 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years with you? And now Shopify or Klaviyo, they show it directly. At that time, no one did it. And I wanted to know this number, because this number is so important to scale your business, to know how much is a client worth to you. For example, if you know a client is worth to me like $1,000 over 2 years, and you know, okay, I can spend like $100 on them and I still make $900 profit. And if I know after 3 months, I get like $300 back from him in average because my sales cycle is built like that, then you can spend today $100. You don't need to make them back right now. But you know, like in 3 months, he spends like $300. You have $200 gross profit, which is amazing. Starbucks, one of the best examples, they know that every customer who walks today in, a new customer, will spend around $13,000 over 20 years. And they're willing like to spend up to $700 for a new client that walks in today and he buys what? A $5, $7, $20 coffee. Mm-hmm. They don't make any profit right now. But they know like this person in average, not everyone, but in average, the average person will stick for the amount of this period of time, and we make back in this period of time $12,000, $13,000. And as long as they can finance this growth, they will be always profitable. And this is like how great companies scale, how every company scale. And this is why I say like marketer is not a marketer, an entrepreneur is not an entrepreneur. These are all labels. You need to understand how growth works. And and understand the concept, how growth works. And then like you can build things like that. And you need to understand when you, will you make your money back. Mm-hmm. And the truth is in the KPIs, in the data. You need to understand data, first thing. The second thing is you need to have faster access to the right data. You need to understand, first of all, why is the data there? And you need faster access. Why there? Let's look at the biggest abstract that there is, war. Why there are intelligence services? It's news, it's data. Why they need to be fast? Because it's important to win the war. One person who needs 2 weeks to get access to data versus a person who has access in 1 minute to it, who will win the war? The person with faster access to the right data. And when they understand the data, this makes all the difference. So having a platform that shows you customer lifetime value, and on the other hand, like it's important that you visually understand it, because we work with our eyes as humans. So if it looks shit, if it looks stupid, or if it looks in a way that is hidden somewhere, it increases the cognitive load on our brain. And we're basically trained with technology to have a lower and lower cognitive load. We prefer things naturally that have a lower cognitive load. Why we prefer things like the Uber map and instead of ordering a taxi anymore with a phone. Mm-hmm. Is there one person who says, like, if he had access to Uber or access to taxi, where he have to talk with a phone agent who is annoyed as hell, and you hear like the like what they ate the last meal, you hear it basically over the phone because it's so disgusting? No. No person will prefer that. Everyone prefer Uber because you don't have to wait in the rain. You don't have to wait in the snow. If you're early, like, you don't know when the taxi comes. Mm. But with Uber, you know exactly, okay, where is the car coming? And you can use your time more efficient. This is a benefit for you. On the other hand, the cognitive load on your head, on your mental power is less. That's why we prefer things like TikTok, for example. Mm. So basically, like, you want to have the right KPIs that you understand. And on the other hand, you want to have as less cognitive load as possible, because that helps you also to make better decisions faster, because you can process more information faster. And this gives you an edge in business.
Mm-hmm. How's it been so far since it's launched?
Copecard.
It's been growing steadily.
Yeah, Copecard is very successful. Yeah. Like
is that one of those things that you launched it and it's just been... there's been no obstacles or anything?
There are so many obstacles, like a lot. Like, and there were times where I didn't know how to continue. There were like mentally, and it was very tough. Was not easy at all. But it's part of life, and I'm very thankful for that, because I would rather have the opportunity than looking on the sidelines and think like, what if I would be the guy?
Well, give me an example of when it was the most stressful with Copecard.
Well, I think one of the most stressful periods was, there were a lot of stressful moments, but I mean, like, the most stressful, I have to be also careful what to say, because we have a lot of NDAs in place, but it was like a couple of years ago, like, we were already on the market for a few years, and we had to make a very few important decisions of what people to keep and what people to let go, and they were all like in key positions, and usually, like, we are a species who is not driven by discomfort. We're comfortable. And when we have like some system working, we don't want to actually change it. But there was a time where I had to ask myself, like, with this kind of people, I will not achieve further growth. They're not the right people. They're not nice people. And I had to change basically the whole management. And the way Copecard is structured, I am not the CEO. And I was never the CEO of Copecard, and I will never be. I'm the majority shareholder of Copecard, but not like in an active role. And so I had to come up to find a complete new management, and which was actually, in retrospect, the greatest thing that could ever happen to me. So because I had to learn how to find better people, how to spot things, and I found great people, way better people through this process, and learned so much as a human being. So in this moment, it was hard. There was like no clear picture of will there be a future or not? Will it succeed? But going through it, growing through it, was one of the best things that could ever happen to me in my life. And I'm massively thankful. And like, and I think like this is always I approach life. Like in the moment, you don't understand some very hard moments, maybe. Some hardships, you don't understand them in the moment. But always in a perspective, you can see things and you understand why things happen the way they happened. And if you reflect yourself again, you can learn from that, you can grow from that, and you can make better decisions in the future. So the best thing and what we kind of have is like our memory. Because time itself is like just man-made concept. There's no past, there's no future, there's only now. And to learn from the past, from a state where it was like lower entropy than it is now, more chaos than it is now, it's the best thing that could happen for us. It's the only way like how our consciousness can improve in life and learn, survive.
What are you, with everything that you've got going on, I mean, you have, I don't know how many businesses and companies you're involved with, but you've got those big two. You've got the new one, which is launching or launched, the PR one.
Yeah.
How much downtime do you have? Like, what is a typical day look like for you? I imagine it has to be extremely organized and planned.
I have an extreme life, I would say. Yeah. I have a very extreme life. I don't have like normal life.
Is you like it that way?
Yeah, I think so. Otherwise, I would get bored. Yeah. I mean, like, I was like, just like a few weeks ago, I was like on Maldives alone for the first time, just like to wind down and like to think. But I actually went back here to Dubai one day earlier.
If there's one place where you're going to get bored, it'll be the Maldives.
I mean, I had fun and I was like, okay, like I could stay here longer. I read books. I got also finally some sleep because that's one thing I don't get certainly enough of. But I was like, no, I want to go back. I had enough now, like, and that's it. And I didn't expect I would say that or like I would travel one day earlier, but I did. And I would say like I have pretty extreme life. Like I can some days like I'm working like from morning till evening, and then like I meet clients or like business partners or whatever in the evening. Sometimes on weekends, like I go out with friends. Like I try to like to. The only thing I figured out why I not only do like straight the same thing over and over again, like super organized. I need sometimes like some other things inside my life, because like I know friends of mine who like they go wake up every day at the same time and they go to bed at the same time during the week, or they don't party at all, and they're happy that way. But I tried this for me and like it was for me it was like boring. Like why and for what? And like it didn't make me more productive. Opposite. It made me just thinking in the same way over and over again. So yeah. So we need new experiences. And I think new experiences is also what gives you energy. Actually energy like to sustain this kind of life. When you stop like having new experiences, when you have always the same routine kind of like. Same like in fitness. If you have the same routine, what happens all the time? There's somewhere no growth anymore.
Yeah.
And it's same for the individuum. If you have the same life living over and over and over, you think the same. When you think the same, you feel the same. When you feel the same, you do the same. And when you do the same, you have the same life over and over and over again. So I think we're built to explore the world and to be curious about the world.
Yeah, any time... I mean, not every trip is the same, but there's certain trips which I've taken, especially recently. I will come back and you just think in a different way.
Yeah, for sure. Always. And I think this is like life. This gives you like the energy. This gives you energy like to explore further, like to come up with new ideas, to see new possibilities. that's the beauty in life. I think the beauty of life is the tragedy of life. You cannot have like only good, good, good. Mm. You also have bad, but what can you learn from the bad things? What can you learn from the good things? And you have amazing experience. Like there are days where you're like, wow, this was worth living up to all this point, because it gives you so much satisfaction, so much of joy, what you achieve, what you look back, what you're proud of. You put something into the world which has value for other people. Other people will say like, this made a difference for me, or this helped me. Thanks, Mike, you know? And I think this is like worth living. This is life, yeah?
Was there a particular trip or experience which stands out most for you that had like the biggest impact on your life or way of thinking?
Oh, there were like a lot of trips. Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, like I remember as a child, like when my parents took me, for example, like to Peru, that was a complete new experience, like to see Machu Picchu when I was like 8 year old, to see like new perspectives of history, of how things works, and this had a big impact. Or like when I see like things like recently, also like discovering a new culture, for example, is one huge thing. Like
that's why I want to go to Japan. I just want to see it.
Yeah,
exactly. I have a feeling after 2 weeks of being there, I'll come back.
It will.
And I'll be thinking very differently.
It will. Absolutely. It will. I haven't been to Japan yet, unfortunately. And if I would have time, I would love to join you. But I remember when I was like first time in China, like I had the same thing. Like China was like, oh, it's a complete new culture, new perspectives, new things to learn. And on the other hand, like also to see how people do things different there and succeed with it, which is kind of like outside of the norm, what we got taught in our world, kind of like in the Western world, is something that you get new ideas, you get inspiration, you get inspired.
You climbed Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
What was that like?
That was fun. Mm. That was really fun. I can absolutely recommend it. It's not that hard that you will die there. Mm. The risk of that is very, very low. Depends also on the route, of course. They're like, I think like we took the hardest route, which was good also. Mm. But I didn't train especially like for that. So like there were like some hard parts where like really were out of breath, the last part especially. But I had there like my most amazing sunrise was like just beautiful when you're like around 5,600 meters, and the sun rises and everything is super silent. You see, you're way above the clouds, and just like in the mountain itself, it's a volcano. Mm. And it's so huge, like it's crazy. It gives you also a new perspective how, like, in what time this thing needs to be created and how small we are. Again, we are humans. Sometimes we think like we're the most thing in the universe. Unfortunately, we're not, or thankfully, we're not. And like, there's so much other things that are way larger than us and outside of our imagination. And like, you think about like how this volcano was created and what kind of magnitude this was, what kind of event it had to be in order like that this thing is there. And you see like all different kind of nature. Like first you start in the rainforest, then like different kind of mountain desert. And then like we were in November, basically like the worst time of the year, because my best friend who always go on this kind of trips, he has like, he's Russian, and he's like, he has like favor for doing things that are extreme. So he picked like the worst time of the year, didn't tell me before. And, was all ice, was like minus 25 degrees, was super cold, but was worth it really much. I can recommend this. It's like very fun. Very fun. Also like different culture to you see there. Yeah.
Do you, apart from nature, which is obviously inspiring, is that, do you get inspired by any particular individual or individuals?
I get inspired, I think, by like a lot of people, actually, like the business partners around me. Like I try always to look at like people, what I can learn from them, and like what inspires me in them, and like everyone around me. Right. I could say like coworkers, business partners, people in front of me, and I can say like I get inspired by you, by your dedication to your craft, like very much. Yeah, for sure. Like they're particular people, I would say no, like, because like they're, I think like most of us, like most people have something they're really good at, like, some values, even like if it's like small acts of kindness, for example. Like, it's always it's good, like, to think about this in life, that you are not alone, I think, and if you with people around you, that you try to create a good time, like, be kind to them, be nice, and, like, it's the small things that matters, and, like, it's the small things I also see, like, where I get inspiration from. Yeah,
I need to ask you one thing as well, because I don't get to ask many people this.
Yeah.
What's it like to have a Bugatti?
A Bugatti.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's cool. It's like a train on. It's a train on. No, it's a tank on rails with a rocket engine.
Mm.
So. It's very massive. It's
what model is it?
Chiron.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's very massive. It's fast, very fast. But on the highway, it drives very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can drive 4 hours with it. They build it very nice. It's also a nice sound system for music. And you can go very, very so fast.
You'd recommend it?
I can recommend
it. To those
it.
That could yeah. afford it.
Yeah. I can recommend it, yeah.
How do you, if you want to buy one, do you have to go... You don't get it directly from Bugatti. Did you go to a showroom and get it?
Like, for Bugatti, like, first of all, you have to fill out a questionnaire, and then, like, you have to meet them, and then, like, to figure out, like, if you can be fit, and then, like, you can
get... that's interesting.
And, yeah, like, you have to fill out, like, a long form about you and, like, where they find, like, LinkedIn profile and, like, also, like, a CV and, like, where they find more information about you. And, yeah, so they are very selective around their client profile.
Branding and who they're collaborating with.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, like, you cannot just walk in there. And on the other hand, this is also part of their positioning. When we're talking about this, like, this is very important. This is kind of their positioning. So, like, by doing things or not doing things, you can position yourself. Same with Ryanair. So Ryanair is, like, the perfect example for that, because what they make you to do is, like, if you want to fly with them, you have to print out your damn ticket by yourself, which costs, like, 20 cents maximum on the amount of tickets they print. But if you forget it, you have to pay, like, 20 or 50 bucks,
yeah.
more than the ticket itself,
yeah.
which is, on the other hand, kind of genius, because it's... rationalizes in the prospect's head, oh yeah, like, the ticket costs just €39 or dollars, but I have to print out my own ticket, and if I forget, I pay way more.
Yeah.
On the other hand, like, I don't know if it's like a marketing gimmick from them or probably both, because marketing and product always goes hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So they, like, the best products always go hand in hand with marketing, or the best products were actually invented by marketers. And make it happen then later, because they figured out what the people need, and then talk with product too, so they can develop this product. But like, for them, they did the calculations, and, like, just 1 or 2% need to forget the tickets, and they have like, with one ticket, they make as much as, like, 1 or 2 flights, mm-hmm. selling additional flights. So, like, it's massively profitable for them as well.
I always wonder. Because obviously Andrew Tate got a Bugatti, and mm-hmm. then there was the quote, the famous quote, "What color is your Bugatti?"
Yeah.
I wonder whether or not, first of all, Bugatti was a fan of that. Like, did they like that or did they not like that? Obviously, being Andrew Tate driving one of their cars.
Mm.
And secondly, did that actually help to drive more sales and more demand for Bugatti?
So, what I think, like, they basically, like, for their, I mean, like, for the target audience, or, like, for the younger generation with enough money to buy a Bugatti, like, it increased definitely the mental availability. And, like, depending on why you buy a Bugatti, I think it increased their sales for sure.
Mm.
In general, like, talking about the brand, also, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Why did you buy a Bugatti?
Why did I buy a Bugatti? Because, first of all, I was never into cars. Never. There were, like, certain cars that I always liked, but maybe one day it was this model, 2 months later was the other model or the other brand. I bought one because with Bugatti, with the history, like, it was, like, the first time where I really felt like this is, like, a car that has, I like to buy things, actually, where I like the story behind it. And the story of Bugatti as a brand, I liked. Mm-hmm. And the way they rebuild it, I liked as well. And the people and the current CEO of Bugatti, like, I think are very smart individuals. Like, and they will do, I think they will do a lot for the car industry in the future. Mm. So I like the product, actually. I really like the product. Yeah.
You've got some pretty cool art in your apartment as well. Is that a similar thing? Like you would purchase art if you like the background behind the piece of art.
If I see meaning in it, basically, to see meaning. I like, and that's exactly what you want to create. You want to create meaning. Mm. So like as a marketer, you want to create meaning, but you're a marketer too. Every one of us is a marketer in a certain way. So what you are, if you just see yourself in the moment as a marketer, you want to create meaning so other people can see meaning in their things. Mm. And what I like about art is the last language in the world, which you don't speak, but that you feel. And you have to be as crazy and fucked up as an artist in order like to understand the art or not. Mm. Imagine, like, isn't it a crazy thing that you never met the artist maybe of the piece, and you stand in front of his picture or sculpture, painting, and you look at it, and either you feel nothing or you feel the world. In order like to feel the world, you have to be as him, even so like you're not connected to him, no blood relation, you never met him, but you feel the exact same thing. And this is, like, for me, the interesting thing in art, because you can see something, someone that you're not, but you still can feel it. Mm. And I mean, like, my father is an artist as well, so I grew up always like with art. But yeah, like I like art that has meaning for me. I don't like to buy the hottest things or like the trendiest things in art right now, or like just I don't even collect art like to make money out of it. I just buy what I like. And sometimes I was right in the past, maybe in some things I'm wrong, but I don't care. For me, it's like, for me, it's meaning, reminder, what do I see in this? Hmm.
What have you got planned for the rest of this year? Any big projects coming up?
Oh yeah, like, I mean, like a lot of things going this year. A lot of things going this year. I mean, like PR is, I think, the biggest and most important one, and where like a lot of time will be spent. And beside that, growing the other things as well. And yeah.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
So where can people find you? I think you have a YouTube channel.
I started a German YouTube channel, yes. But it's ending also soon again.
I tried to watch a few videos.
Because I don't want to talk about the same things that are being talked already 150 times. That would be just like say the same thing and paint it in a different color. And just for the sake of having a YouTube channel and get views. I made this YouTube channel to talk about certain things that I think are important for the marketing world. And I have one more video for the German channel, and then I will stop it. And maybe I will start like English
speaking. You keep the videos
up there, though? Yeah, no, the videos I will keep. But beside that, no need. No time also, and like too much focus. But about the things I talk, I know like only I can talk about this in this perspective, in this way. Mm. I think it's... I know that it's a huge value for a lot of people, so this will be there, and let's see, maybe I will do it in English, let's see about this, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess you don't really need to, it would just be a matter of, do you want to help people?
Yeah, and of course, the most important thing is like always never forget money is energy.
Yeah.
So like you need money to do the like the most crazy important things in your life, so never forget this. So you always want to try to make, I think, like if you're like a businessman, you should try always to make money in a way, if you can help other people, to bring them to the next stage, to the next level, to give them a new perspective, help them solve their problems. If you have expertise in that, why not make both at the same time? And you get energy back in time in form of money, and that makes it actually possible. I mean, like every video was not cheap produced on my channel, so like. And the last video, I think, cost like 25,000 euro in total or so. So,
fuck.
Yeah. So, but this makes it happen. And I know it's like a great piece of content, and it will be there for a while. And like if people can learn from it something and use products that I have, and I make it back in this time. So, like, I think it's a great thing for everything. And this is, I think, how the majority of the world should think, actually.
Well said. Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say best of luck, but I don't think you need luck. I think you've got it all very much under control.
Probability of success.
Yeah. Nice, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you for the interview.